Blog Talk Radio.
Ron and Don Show. I'm Don Allen over at Studio A. And Studio B, we have the legendary Mr. Ronald A. Edwards. Mr. Edwards, how are you doing tonight?
Real good, Don, on a kind of a overcast, rainy slash wet day. But then, you know, it's kind of like April. Better the rain than the snow. What do we got, Don? I understand we have a couple guests.
Yes, we do. Right off the top here, we have Hamlin Cares, who was with us last week. They had the 5K run coming up here this Saturday. And, Edward, are you there? Eddie?
Yes, I'm here, Don.
Yeah, why don't you introduce yourself and your colleague, and then tell us a little bit about what's going on this Saturday.
All right, well, my name's Ed Slater, and
I'm Gatlin Mowell.
And hey, how are you? With...
Good, how are you, man?
Great, great. Go ahead.
Okay, well, yeah, we're with Hamlin Cares, as Don already said. We're an organization put together by a management course here at Hamlin, and our goal is to raise a ton of money for the DAV, which is the Disabled Veterans of America or Minnesota. And, yeah, it's this Saturday.
And what time does that start?
It starts at 9 o'clock. It's at 1600 Phelan Drive in St. Paul. And the registrations are $15 and then $20 on race day.
Okay, is there a website people can go to register?
Yeah, they can show up to the race and register on that day. We also have registrations and an email that people can contact us at to get registrations out to them.
Well, why don't you give us that email?
All right, it's Hamlin Cares, HamlinCares at gmail.com.
Okay, that's HamlinCares at gmail.com for that DAV Hamlin Cares 5K this Saturday. You say 1600 Phelan Parkway?
Yes, sir. Phelan Drive.
Phelan Drive. That's right. That's right. Well, we appreciate you guys being on, and we'd certainly like to find out how it went. And I understand you'll have a press release going out tonight to local media. Maybe we can get guys like Reg Chapman at Channel 4 and Iris Perez at Fox 9 to come out there and give you guys some props on Saturday, okay?
Hey, well, absolutely. Don, awesome. I just have one question for the two gentlemen, kind of a little satire. Now, gentlemen, based on your effort, and this is a part of kind of an exercise coming out of your management course, do you look forward to getting an A?
Yes, that's always the plan, and we're working really hard to get that.
All right, gentlemen. Thank you for being with us, and the best of luck.
Thank you. Take it easy. Wow, that was great. Yeah, they're working for a good cause there. It's pretty popular over on campus there at Hamlin University campus, Mr. Edwards, and I hope they have a lot of success. Now, I'm very pleased to announce our next guest. Ms. Desiree Galloway is the executive director, founder of Wellspring Second Chance, a program here in the Minneapolis, St. Paul, Twin Cities, state of Minnesota, that deals with incarceration, education, women's program for young youth, I should say, and something, Mr. Edwards, that we haven't seen in the inner cities for a long time, but she's been there, she's been doing the work, and on May 3rd, she's having the Wellspring Second Chance, and she'll explain that when she comes on, have the Second Chance Gala and Silent Auction. And so, welcome, Ms. Galloway, how are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm glad you could be with us tonight. And why don't you tell us, give us, you know, in the capsule or so, tell us a little bit about what you do, your background. I mean, you've told me in the pre-production show that we talked about, our meeting, and I just want people to know exactly who you are and what you do. Go ahead, please.
Okay. We are a nonprofit, faith-based nonprofit organization, 501c3, but we also are a psychotherapeutic and educational center dedicated to healing through relational approaches to self, others, creation, and spirit, which touch and bring forth the wellspring of personal being unique to each individual. Wellspring assists youth, individuals, families, and ex-offenders in working through their emotional and psychological and educational issues that prevent them from establishing and maintaining a healthy and meaningful life. We put a premium on reducing the recidivism or intergenerational incarceration and the recidivism of ex-offenders back into the system.
Oh, wow, that's great. Now, I understand that and Mr. Edwards is here also on the air with me, and last Friday, April 18th, there was a meeting at the Minneapolis Public School District headquarters, a public safety meeting, and they were kind of nervous about what was going on in the city and how they were going to squash it and have better outcomes, better public safety. And I know that you were one of the attendees to that meeting. And I guess we'd like an overview. And I think Mr. Edwards might have some questions for you.
Well, it was basically a public safety meeting. And there were persons that were interested in reducing the crime, uptick of crime in the Northside area, done by both adults as well as youth.
Go ahead, please. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
And so the questions, they had three questions. What can be done to prevent crime on the north side? What can we do as an agency to commit to doing on the north side? And then, of course, what are the results can occur on the north side? So what results do we want to occur? So
okay. Just a couple of questions. Ms. Galloway, first of all, who sponsored this? Who put this on? Who coordinated this? Do you know?
I can't quite remember who all sponsored it. I do know that I think it was Chief Hartle.
Yeah.
And
Council
I think
President
the,
Barb Johnson. Uh huh.
Yes. Right.
Yeah, the little short lady that was there. Okay. I would assume the mayor.
Mayor Hodges was present, yes, and very much present in the session. Yes.
Okay. Now you referred to Northside. Of course, the problem of gangs, violence, and et cetera is across the entire city. In fact, it's across the entire metro area, particularly when you talk about all these unsolved homicides like in the Somali community, et cetera. Now, when are they going to have because I understand they said they'll meet again in September, which is kind of puzzling. So when will they have a meeting in South Minneapolis?
Or I'm not sure when. I think that the purpose of this particular meeting was to focus on the north side and what we can do to make sure that we have maintained control and safety, public safety, for all, to decrease
and
the violence
what
in the
came,
area.
Okay, and so at the conclusion, I think you adjourned around 3 o'clock or something like that. You started at 9 in the morning. So what is the plan? I mean, I saw an article in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. So is it a combination of what?
It's a combination of faith-based organizations, community organizations, the police department, the courts, everyone collaborating together to make a safer summer for everyone.
And
Go ahead, Don.
Since you were in the meeting and I was not there, but we've been getting a lot of calls that Mr. Al Flowers played a really significant role during this meeting.
Well, I know that Al Flowers was there. And everyone had an opportunity to say what they were going to do to help prevent crime in the north side. So
okay.
Al Flowers,
he was in the meeting?
Al Flowers, it's my understanding he was, yes.
Oh, you said it was your understanding. Okay, but you were in the meeting, so, I mean, did you remember him He's a tall gentleman, African-American, et cetera. So do you remember him standing up and talking and indicating some positions and recommendations or not?
No, I don't remember.
Okay.
No, I don't recall.
What was, in your estimation, what was the number of African-Americans who were in attendance?
Oh, there probably was maybe 10 to 12 out of the whole group.
Right.
Okay.
What about African-American law enforcement? Were you introduced to the, I mean, I already kind of know, were you introduced to any of the African-American law enforcement officers that were there?
Yes, I did get to meet Frizzell. He was the president, and Deputy Ellis was there.
Who?
Those are the two that Dave Ellis from the Hennepin County Sheriff's Department. So those are the two African-American officers that I noted.
Well, what about Chief Harrington?
Chief Harrington was
Metro.
Also president. Yes, I apologize. He was also president as well, yes.
Yes, okay. Okay, so what? Tell us a little bit more about how it came about the Soul Patrol. That's going to be one of the instruments used to bring stability during this summer of 2014. How is that going to be carried out?
Well, they're going to have the officers hit the streets and engage in the youth before crime, starts. You know, doing positive activities. You know. All the agencies, to include the Minneapolis Police Department, are trying to do prevention versus intervention. You know what I mean? We're trying to keep it from happening. So yes, so the police officers and have agreed to work collaboratively with all community agencies to make sure it's a safer summer.
Okay, but now who will have statutory and fiduciary responsibility for the Soul Patrol? We haven't had a Soul Patrol since way back in 1996. So how will that be handled?
Well, that's a combination of many things. I think the police will get out of their cars and, you know, engage in with the youth on foot and on bicycles.
Mm-hmm.
Mad Dads will be, you know, also doing the same thing, going around. And they will go to problem areas, meaning if they
hot
have
spots.
A call.
I think they refer to them as
hot
spots.
That is right.
Uh-huh.
The hot spots, they will go directly to those areas and kind of decrease, you know, the uptick of further concerns, further violence, further.
Okay. Now, normally something like this certainly doesn't come unless, you know, there's financing. So what was the price tag? I mean, I know the General Mills Foundation, whose director was there, who is also the wife of the current federal U.S. attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota. What are we talking about, $150,000, $200,000, $300,000 for the community volunteers?
There wasn't specific numbers in regards to financial monies that would be distributed. It just said that General Mills would be supportive of Pell and several other interventions that we are trying to introduce into the summer activities for youth.
Okay. Now, because you certainly are involved with the county system and et cetera, how many judges were there, and were there any? Well, obviously not. I was going to ask, was there any African American judges there?
No, I don't think there was any African-American judges there, but there was a couple judges there. There were people that represented the county, you know, from human services all the way to judges. So, yeah.
Okay. All right. Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you for responding to the inquiry. Mr. Allen, hand it back to you.
Well, I would like Ms. Galloway is having this event on May 3rd, and I'd just like her to tell us, you know, she has some very special guests coming in, and I'd just like her to run down that list of celebrities that she has coming in, because this is a pretty high-profile thing, and it's really nice when we get this information first and can distribute it among the community and let people know where to buy tickets. So I'm going to give it to you, and this is for your shameless plug for your event. Go right ahead.
Okay, yes. So Wellspring Second Chance Center is having their gala and silent auction on Saturday, May the 3rd, from 6:15 to 9:30 p.m. at Interfaith Outreach Community Partners, which is located at 1605 County Road 101 in Plymouth, Minnesota. The keynote speaker is Noah Kilroy. He's been blasted all across the nation. He is a long way from prison. He's an ex-offender. His name is Noah Kilroy. He went from prison from going to be an a defendant to becoming the defender. He is now an attorney. And so he is the keynote speaker, you know, for this evening, for May 3rd. Also, we will have musical guests as Lieutenant Colonel Schindler from the Air Force, and then Ali Qatar is Mr. Ashanti. It is a cater event by Sammy's eatery on Broadway. They will be catering this event. It is a sit-down, semi-formal event. There will be music. There will be a silent auction. We have gotten support from several organizations to include several churches as well as Slumberland, what are some of the other organizations that has given to us. We had a young man, a business from Eden Prairie even donate to the $300 to this event. So we are getting great support from the community. We would ask that you come out and support our youth and our families, because the violence is not going to stop if we don't do something about it. Our program provides services to both youth as well as adults. The CHOICE program is a program for youth that are involved in the juvenile justice system, and then some that are not. We get kids that are from alternative schools, and they complete the program, they will stay in their prospective school. So that's a reward, because all of our programming that we provide, we put a premium on kids remaining in school and out of the streets and out of violence.
Well, it sounds like a plan, and that's going to be – and how can people buy tickets? Can you let our audience know that?
Yes, you can buy tickets at the door. You know, tickets are – there's no difference in differential in payment. But you can buy your tickets. The couples are $95 and $75 for individual tickets. You can also go on the website and donate and get a ticket that way. And then also – if you want to make a call to us at 612-296-2895, you can request a ticket that way as well. Our website address is www.wellspringmn.org. Okay. And this year's theme is the gift of a second chance. And everybody deserves a second chance at life.
I agree. Well, thank you very much, Mr. Edwards.
Appreciate it.
Okay, well, thank you very much for your time, Ms. Galloway. We appreciate this interview, and let us know how that goes. And well, we have another couple weeks here, so.
Yes, we do. It's May 3rd again.
May 3rd. Yeah, everybody get out, buy your tickets. That's Wellspring. Go ahead.
Yes, you can buy your tickets either at the door or previous to that. By calling us or going to the website.
Thank you for your time, and we look forward to hearing more about this.
Thank you very much, guys.
Thank
have
you.
A
Bye-bye.
Good evening.
You too.
All right, thank you. All right, Mr. Allen. Okay. Wow. Don, want to do a update, I promise, this family and their supporters, because it was difficult to get leadership to respond to this, but the family has stayed the course. Unfortunately and tragically, Don, on November, the evening of November 3rd, 2013, was a tragic and horrendous vehicular homicide on Olson Highway. Two young African Americans, a Mr. Johnson and a Miss Brandy Ann Banks Suddeth, were killed instantly by an individual who apparently is related to some of our slumlords, a man by the name of Philip Scott Bredesen. Mr. Bredesen resides in Golden Valley. He was going at speeds exceeding, according to the forensic examination and reconstruction, at 105 miles an hour when he hit three cars, killing this very lovely African-American couple. It took 6 months, but with the perseverance of the stepfather and the mother, this afternoon, Mr. Bertelson was arraigned in Hennepin County District Court and apparently is charged with two counts of vehicular homicide. So it does prove that if you are tenacious and if you are certainly committed on behalf of your loved one, that you can at least force a action that could possibly lead to justice for this young African-American couple, young lady, young man, whose lives were tragically taken by a Caucasian who was driving an excessive rate of speed from his home. During the course of the investigation, his friends admitted they had been drinking at some bars in Golden Valley. They maintained that they took him home. They thought everything was okay. He came back out, got in his car, and went flying down Olson Highway until he crashed into, as we said, three automobiles, killing these two young people. But just thought we'd pass it out because, and we think the public has a right to know, and certainly our community, the African-American community, because there was a lot of chatter in the days immediately following the tragedy of November 3rd, 2013. But the family could get no assistance from any of our leadership organizations, and I find that to be so tragic. But they stayed the course as a family, if you will, and obtained the legal counsel of an attorney that has been on our program here over the last couple of years, and with the assistance of advisors, were able to help the authorities finally complete the investigation and charge Philip Scott Burleson with vehicular homicide. So I just feel that it's important to let community know about that. We doubt very much that the Star Tribune will be caring anything about it. Okay?
Okay.
And let's get the phone lines open. Phone lines
Sure. Phone lines are open now. The number is 347-426-3904. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Our lines are wide open. Hey, Mr. Edwards, you know, I want to ask you real quick, what do you think about this vote they got coming up in the Minneapolis City Council to change Christopher Columbus Day to Indigenous People Day?
Now, you know, I've been one who for, you know, a couple of decades has said, why don't we really talk in terms of the real name of Christopher Columbus, the man who came over on three little boats and allegedly founded America. Of course, there were people here. I've always been told in my classes and classes that I've taught that you can't find anything if someone else already has possession of it, or in the case of finding continents and things like that, if there are people, indigenous people, who already reside there and have been there for 5 or 6 or 7 thousand years before you know, our friend came. So to your specific question, I'm not understanding what the probative value is, if you will. Maybe you can help me.
Yeah, Cristobal Colon is one of his names, and the English pronunciation would be Cristoforo Colombo.
Colombo.
Yes. And so that's not even Christopher Columbus. But it's very interesting, Mr. Edwards, because that brings up, you know, a lot of interesting things. We know that on, like, websites like the Star Tribune and WCCO Television, when they post a story about anything like Black History Day month or celebration, you get tons of that racist rhetoric from hate monger trolls out there on the web. And who are reading that stuff. And I just think this is another, the city of Minneapolis has just opened up an opportunity for this thing to happen again with these, you know, just the hate speech and the rise of hate. But there's a flip side to that. This city council has done nothing but address social issues since Mayor Hodges and the city council took office. They've done nothing hardcore or actually basically to help the economic base of the city of Minneapolis.
Right, Don, keep on. Let me. I'm getting a call here. I'll be checking back in about 10 seconds.
Okay,
just keep on.
Thank you.
Keep on.
Yes, and so I guess what I'm saying is that I'm really interested in finding out what Mayor Hodges and the city council will do on civil rights and the defunct Minneapolis Department of Civil Rights, who is, you know, well known for shredding cases and telling people that there was no probable cause. I was a victim of that personally in 2010. And so I'm very interested again, in trying to figure out what the heck is going on with that city council, and this, we call her Mayor Betsy Dodges Hodges, and why she is not doing what she needs to do as a mayor of a town, you know, Mr. Edwards, that is, you know, in chaos right now. You know, we could be expecting the bloody summer of 2014.
And that was one of the things that was discussed in the meeting that Ms. Galloway was good enough to talk to us a little bit about. But what does Webster's Dictionary say about indigenous people? I've got something on my computer here. Could you just type it in while we're... I mean, what does Webster say? I mean, what
indigenous
people?
Okay, first of all, I looked up the word indigenous. It's originating or occurring naturally in a particular space, semicolon, native. And the example they give was the indigenous people of Siberia, okay? Now, indigenous people, and I'm using Wikipedia for your academic people out there that want me to, you know, quote my source. Indigenous people are people defined as international or nationally or national legislation as having a set of specific rights based on their historical ties to a particular territory.
Okay. And so now we're going to have a day, or we're going to change Christopher, who allegedly founded America. So we're going to have a day honoring the indigenous people, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And what will that consist of? Do we have any idea, as the city council is looking at the legislation? I mean, it will consist of what? I mean, will we talk about such things as how the indigenous people who were already here, and by the way, the first land masses that Christopher touched were islands like, you know, the Bahamas, the Virgin Islands and maybe such and so. But anyways, so we're going to be dealing with the indigenous people. So will we talk about how they were treated and almost beaten into extinction? And then will we talk about slavery? Will we talk about Willie Lynch, the mastermind of oppression and abuse against Native Americans, or in this case, Caribbean Americans, if you will, and black Africans and stuff. I mean, are those kind of things we'll talk about, or what we just have, you know, like festive ceremonies and, you know, drink wine and make money for the places downtown? I mean, do we have any idea what is really planned once we embrace, in you know, holiday for indigenous people?
I think this is just, you know, for them to celebrate the European colonization of the Americas. You know, basically,
all over again,
you know.
It
doesn't, you know, there's some things they could have done, because I've read some things online where, you know, people are asking for a White People Day, a Russian Day, a German Day, a Republican Day.
They have that. Have you ever been down to New Ulm, and have you ever gone down to the festivals in Shakopee and et cetera? I mean, white America, you know, has their days and et cetera each and every day, I mean, almost. But they've had their four, five, or six holidays, including Thanksgiving. I mean, think about Thanksgiving. I mean, which, by the way, the indigenous people of this continent do not celebrate Thanksgiving. You can find very few Native Americans that care anything about Thanksgiving. But Thanksgiving, as you just eloquently, you know, laid on the table, is looked upon as a specific period of, you know, of gifting, if you will, of helping the poor little brown savages, you know,
yes,
that they came upon in Virginia, you know, and helping them understand how blessed they were to have these good Christians come to this land.
Exactly.
So there's some dispute here in Minnesota, because some Minnesotans maintain that the Vikings got here first, maybe about 200 years before.
And see, no one really looks at the history of what happened. And, you know, I had to have a whole change after I started reading books by, like, Ronald Takaki, A Different Mirror, and stuff like that years ago. Because, you know, everyone talks about Pocahontas has been made into a Disney cartoon. Like, she was,
absolutely,
you know, this Native American that the white settlers fell in love with because she's, you know, beautiful and things like that. But what people don't know, if you go back in history, even starting around the 1400s and move forward, is settlers came here dozens of times before 1490 or 1442, I think it was, and the Indians killed them. You know, they died and they brought disease here, killed a lot of Native Americans too here on this land. And,
absolutely, with infectious disease, syphilis, and things like that. Absolutely.
Yep, and then Pocahontas ended up being a diplomat. Actually, she married an Englishman, and she died on the ship heading back to England. And that's kind of where the story's in. But you never hear that. No one's taken all white cast and made a story about the Native Americans and Pocahontas like they did with Noah. And that was kind of a punch at that Noah movie. But you know,
or like when they took Anthony Quinn and made him Toussaint. The hero of the founding of Haiti and the Dominion Republic. Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Anthony Quinn. I can well remember him playing Toussaint. Yeah. Okay. So well, okay then. So we got that going, and so this they'll be voting on this, and so with the first official day will be in October. Is that right?
That's if they vote on it in passes. It looks like the first official day will be in October, but I just hope, you know, like when William Bradford landed on Plymouth Rock and he reported in 1620 that a lot of the people fell sick of the smallpox and a lot of people died. You know, I hope that people don't get the smallpox after Friday. So,
absolutely. Now, Don, I understand we had something else here in our beloved city. There was an issue about First Amendment, I understand. Condoleezza Rice, former National Security Advisor to George Bush, and, of course, more importantly, Secretary of State, was here. University of Minnesota invited her, paid her, and et cetera. But I understand people did not want her to speak, which is kind of interesting for universities of higher learning, which go to great lengths to talk in terms of the importance of First Amendment. Are we getting any kind of feedback? Was there anything that the former Secretary of State said that we were surprised about?
No, you know, I don't think we were surprised about it, but it's very interesting that the group of very liberal left-wing students who went after her, you know, did not realize, you know, yeah, she, you know, worked under George Bush cabinet. They tagged her as a war criminal. And my back and forth with them on my social media sites was that, you know, usually war criminals are charged and found guilty. So if you can bring that to me to the table, and I'm not protecting Condoleezza Rice's politics at all. And I'm just looking at her as the nation's first African-American Secretary of State. Her grandfather, she was the son of a sharecropper. They experienced Jim Crow. It's her childhood in Alabama. You know, she was friends with the girls.
Experienced violence and the loss of four of her closest friends in the vile bombing of the Baptist church there in Birmingham. So go ahead, Jeff.
Yeah, and so
was a prodigy. Entered the University of Denver at, like, you know, age 16,
and
get
a
full scheduled classes, you know.
Yeah, and you know, and what this guy didn't understand, I tried to explain to him, you know, the white patriarchal system from way back when, you know, even past slavery, has historically, black women have been invisible parts of society, and they're bombarded with cloaks of silence. You know, they're deconstructed, ignored, sexually charged, and it leaves a thing wide open, because you look at, even from some different novels where you're looking at black women are set to this one standard. Either they're going to be maids or sexual objects. In all the white literature, you know, of the 1600 on, you know, even before that. And you have a woman, a prodigy, like you said earlier, who has made it, has lived the American dream, but is also African-American, who did some, you know, amazing things in this United States. But she worked for an administration that they didn't find any weapons of mass destruction, but I don't hear anybody hollering about George Bush being a war criminal.
Let me do it even more better than that, because this is the person that I'm getting ready to name that really received significant protection and cover-up. And that is former Vice President Cheney.
Yeah.
As well as Donald Rumsfeld. Donald Rumsfeld, the same man who in the
early 1980s, was the negotiator for the sale of chemical weapons to then Saddam in his fight with the Iranians, and which was then used on and killed thousands of innocent Iraqis and Iranians. It was Donald Rumsfeld who, as I said, negotiated and was the facilitator of these chemical weapons being sold to the Iraqis. One of the reasons really why they rushed to make sure that Saddam was executed and quickly, and that was a very botched job, if you will. But we don't, you're right, I mean, Don, we don't talk about that. We don't talk about the role of Cheney and others. And we don't want to talk about, you know, Cheney's undermining of a very important and respected American, a man who certainly served in the military. Well, you know, Dick Cheney certainly didn't. And that was Colin Powell. So if you're going to have those kinds of discussions, I've always believed let's just go the whole gamut, if you will, and talk in terms of, you know, all aspects of corruption in government.
I agree 100%. Yeah, that was just a really strange, you know, turn of events to have her to come here and all that noise that was made and. It's just ridiculous. And there's no, you know, foundation of anything that they could come back and really say anything to me that really made any sense as standing, you know, by and listening to, you know, I would have loved to went and saw her there. But, you know, that's another thing. That's another whole different thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Phone lines open, by the way, for those that maybe had some thoughts about even the suggestion that Condoleezza Rice should have been denied the right of First Amendment, if you will, to talk in terms of what it was that she talked in terms of. She, you know, she certainly spoke firsthand with such things as rendition and the America's policy. In fact, big battle going on now about, declassifying some interesting documents and reports which talk in terms of, you know, America's role and being involved in torture. By the way, Iraq was not the first time that this country officially was involved in the torture of, quote-unquote, opposition forces, if you will. I mean, these folks were doing torture back in the days of the Indian Wars, if you know what I mean. You know, people tend to forget it wasn't Native Americans who initiated scalping, as an example, and actually scalping was seen as a form of torture when that was first introduced by white settlers. Oops.
I'm actually on the website right now, Say No to War Crimes, Say No to Condoleezza, and I'm asking them, I said, if they can explain themselves, to give us a call, and we'll see
Absolutely. We'll see what happens here.
I mean, I doubt that anybody from this group is going to bother
Let me put this out here so that, you know, they don't think that we're just limited in our thinking. If you really want to get into that war crimes and et cetera, then maybe we need to go back. Let's don't want to go back too far for most of them because they probably weren't around or have not been educated. But should we also then talk in terms of Bill Clinton and his, quote-unquote, passive role in genocide that was being carried out against Muslims in a place called Yugoslavia in 1995, 96, and 97. The torture that was going on was being carried out by white Christian Serbs, if you will. If we want to talk about torture, I mean, let's just go back into the record. We've already declared that, you know, torture as part of an American policy, as I said before, started way back in the quote-unquote move to make the Native American extinct, you know.
Yeah.
And also in the taking of their land. So if we want to have those kinds of discussions, let's just be broad-based. You know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. Let's have a whole thing. Again, that number is 347-426-3904. Phone lines are open at 347-426-3904. Yeah, there's a lot going on.
We didn't get a chance really to kind of critique the big criminal justice meeting because I was trying to get a little better reflection from our caller on, you know, what really is, you know, is going to happen, how it's going to happen, who's going to pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested in, what the Soul Patrol is going to do and who is the Soul Patrol. I'm just hoping maybe we get a call from as she said, and she was on point there, it was only about 12, 13 black folks out of over 70 participants. But maybe we could get a sense of, what the future holds, because I'm hearing a lot of people since last Friday now talking in almost global terms about the anticipated violence here in the Twin Cities. And we've had probably 10 or 12 shootings. When I say shootings, I mean shots fired, people being shot at, et cetera. And I think it's tragic that we should remind ourselves that within hours after that summit ended at 1250 West Broadway, that two young African Americans were gunned down, one at 14th and DuPont. In fact, right across from Ascension Church, where there's a house of quote-unquote some ill repute. Apparently Father Connor has paid any attention to that. And then a young man was shot up around 34, 36. And Emerson, he in fact was paralyzed, becoming the second young African-American to become a paraplegic as an outgrowth of being shot within about 8-9 days. The first one was, and that's not really being talked about, a shooting outside of Target Field, the home of the Minnesota Twins. Though it was after the game, but these young men were part of a group that was cleaning up. They were part of a work detail, doing what we always say that young Negroes, African-Americans don't want to do. They were working, got off work about 2:30, and as they left Target Field, were met by gunfire. One was wounded, but has since been released, but the other young man will be paralyzed for life. Now, that, as I said, and then 8, 9, 10 days later, another young man is shot and wounded and paralyzed. So maybe we can get a handle on this, Don.
Yeah, maybe they can control it because, I put up a story that General Mills should, Minneapolis Foundation needs to hold on to their money for a minute and in favor of a community self-reset. Because the folks they're giving the money to now, Mr. Edwards, and if they have given any money or planning, I don't think they've done a good job in the past, and I don't think they've done a good job now. And the school district is still withholding, the truancy piece, so we can't find out where
that was a done deal. I understand after you had made official inquiry under color law, that decision was made to stealth that even more, and that's basically, a done deal.
Mm.
That $50,000 has already been transferred into bank accounts. You mean they never gave you the information that you requested under Minnesota law?
No, they did not. And I issued an email over to Mr. Noble because, it's been past 10 days. I said, give them 10 days. We have 10 days to get you the information. I said, is that right? And, they haven't gotten me the information, and I don't think they plan on giving me the information, and I just have to press a little bit harder because I think there's something a little bit larger here, and we're just going to have to figure it out. That's just like when I went after and got the information for CSI, Community Standards Initiative at the Minneapolis Public Schools, who the woman told me via email and on the phone that they have not received one report of anything they've did since they've received money from the Minneapolis Public Schools. I said, how is that possible?
Well, wasn't that the absence of reporting, wasn't that what caused Karen Ababuda, the former number two person a couple years ago at the beloved Minneapolis Foundation under Sandy Bark, that cost her career, 23-year career. And, nobody ever wants to talk about that. No one wants to deal with that one because of the absence of reports from the tornado relief committees and such things as that. Maybe what we make a mistake of on these kinds of programs is that in our town, this is for our international and national audiences, is that there is kind of a rite of passage, if you will. And I kind of call it criminal privilege, if you will, kind of privilege given to criminals, that certain information does not have to be forthcoming. But then we find ourselves Dean Pribby, and we had it on this program at the top of the hour, that the top of 8:30, that we find out that there's these meetings and you've got judges and prosecutors and et cetera, and just enough of a mix of the very people that are being talked about, in which people are, you know, talking in terms of the violence and how it happens and why it happens and the drugs and et cetera. And no one has any recollection of the millions and millions of dollars that have been poured into the African-American community to deal with the problem. I'm not understanding. You know, we've had some calls over the last couple of months. I mean, people have at least been bold enough, if you will, and honest enough to raise some questions about, you know, folks who seem to always be the recipients of the dollars. Comes time to explain what the heck is happening, folks don't want to do anything about it. And I understand in the case of some of my leaders that some of these things are very personal, you know what I mean, with them. But, you know, to a mother that has gone to a hospital to see her son who has been shot and paralyzed, let's say, in the last 15 days, it's pretty personal with her, too.
Oh, you know? Yeah, most definitely. In fact,
I'm going to tell you an interesting story with regards to the young man shot and paralyzed outside of Target Field about 2 weeks ago. His father, who is a hard man, father in the home, by the way, for those that like to talk about it, his father had talked to him about the importance of getting his life turned around and doing something productive. And one of the things was the father was insisting on that he, you know, get a job, you know, start being accountable, responsible in the sector. And, you know, when this young man was shot, wounded, and paralyzed outside of Target Field in downtown Minneapolis, which will host the Major League All-Star Game in July, you know, he was doing just what was being requested of him, trying to be responsible. And yet not anything has really been mentioned. I asked the question, did any of our leaders, ecumenical or otherwise, visit the both of these young men, both paralyzed, both shot in two separate incidents over the, well, again, the last 14 days. People said, nah, man, ain't been nobody down to see these folks. So I'm just trying to get a feel of how we get our community values together. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Get our commitment together. Don, I mean, you have any thoughts on it?
Mr. Edwards, you know, I got to just stay in my lane. You know, I have to do the news and the radio show and do what I do, but I used to go to all those community meetings, as did you, you know, and sit there and you give people ideas and you tell them, they run with the ideas. But, you know, if you don't have the intellectual property of a house ant, you can't, you know, that's what they have, the intellectual property of a house ant, I should say. You can't pull off a lot of these things that you have to do to move forward. And if you're sitting there with your satchel open waiting for someone to put 50 grand in it, you're not really thinking about, you know, helping the community. You're thinking about helping yourself, basically. And, I mean, to an extent, I guess that's okay, but don't go out there and say you're a nonprofit, that you do all this great work, that you help all these people. We do know good and damn well that millions of dollars have been through them poor areas in North, South Minneapolis, St. Paul, Lower, the East Side, West Side, and almost 90% of that money goes to people's salary and to pay the bills to keep the doors open. So how can you really help?
Or keep them BMWs or the classic cars running. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Again, those phone lines are open. You know, the opportunity for folks to talk in terms of what they think and feel, you know, is present. I mean, I hear a lot of discussions and, you know, closed and private kinds of sessions, enclaves and et cetera. When I say enclaves, I'm talking about at Milder's or, you know, cafes or the bars like Sevens and et cetera. But yet when it comes time to step up to the plate and let the community know, you know, this could be the kind of opportunity for some of these folks to be recognized and appreciated as having leadership potential and possibility, if you will.
Ms. Edwards, we have a caller.
Oh, let's get the caller in.
Caller, you're live on the air. Go ahead. Who are we speaking with?
Well, you're speaking with Mr. M. I'm a Minneapolis resident. I've had the opportunity to call into this fine program before.
Mr. M,
how you doing?
I have some theme music for you. Just a minute. There you go. Mr. M is here. Go ahead, Mr. M. Sorry about that.
Go ahead, M. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
Well, you know, after, you know, listening, you know, for a little while here, I thought I'd chime in. I'm just... You know, I'm trying to identify, you know, as a longtime resident of the Twin Cities area, you know, who is our current, or does any current leadership exist in the African American community? I mean, I see our, you know, politicians in particular. I'll just, you know, name our recently elected mayor, you know, meeting with the Somali community, wearing some of the Somali garb, which I thought was really almost hysterical when I saw that, and how she reaches out to the Somali community. And is there any force within the African-American community that, you know, has some type of pull or some type of foothold where at least our political leaders and people need to know, you know, they need to be brought to the table too? They need to be brought, and they need to be, our community needs to be present at the table. I just don't know who these people are right now. I don't know
Well, if you would bear with me for a minute, because you've asked a good, tough question, and part of our legacy here at the Donnie Ronnie program is to be able to answer honestly and transparently a question. Let me give you the scenario of this this gang summit, this safety summit. They actually changed the name around. Now, when the decision was made earlier in the year, probably around March, late March, that it was time to do this and to it was like an audition to get involved some of the people who are on the Chief's Oversight Committee, community leaders who I first ran into in October of last year. The decision was made to hand the responsibility off to a man by the name of Sherman Patterson, Mr. Patterson, who served Mayor R.T. Ryback for about a decade, about 10 years, a little bit better, as the kind of as the coordinator for police community liaison out of Mayor R.T. Ryback's office. And Mr. Patterson
never heard of him
held
before.
That,
continue.
I know. Mr. Patterson held that position for over a decade. Now, when Mayor R.T. Ryback, you know, decided for any number of reasons not to run again, and Betsy Hodges won to become our second female mayor, walking in the footsteps of the legendary Sharon Sells Belton, they had to find a job for Sherman. And so what happened, they played some musical chairs. The young lady who had been in the chief's office was moved up to the mayor's office, and Mr. Patterson was moved down to the chief's office to be community contact between the chief's office and quote-unquote community. So he was given the responsibility to develop the list, if you will, of invitees from the colored community, because the system already understood, the city council president, the mayor, and the chief already understood who would be there from the quote-unquote Caucasian community. I mean, that would be powerful judges, if you will, chief prosecutors, including the county attorney and the very powerful, powerful U.S. attorney for the Federal District of Minnesota, whose wife also is the director of the general, is a vice president and director of the General Mills Foundation. And so they came up with, actually initially they came up with about seven names of African Americans that would be invited to come in, who the white participants would feel comfortable around. Okay, so you follow me on this one? They would feel comfortable.
I do.
Let me finish, sure. Give you the whole narrative. So the situation was further developed. The purpose initially was to basically hold the meeting in kind of secret, if you will. And a couple things happened that have not been talked about. There was some demands because some folks some way or another found out about the meeting and asked Mr. Patterson if he could include their names, and a couple of them were with official city-like organizations. Now, the decision was made that with the exception of Deputy Chief Ed Frizzell,
that there would be no other African-American officer for the Minneapolis Police Department, which, you know, that kind of speaks volumes about what they think about these black officers, many of them who have worked the streets in organizations like homicide, assault units, and et cetera. So that increased the number maybe by maybe four. And so you basically had about 13, as previous caller who was in attendance pointed out. You wound up with about 13 or 14 African-Americans. Now, they got into a heck of a debate. I speak to it in my column in next week's Spokesman Recorder. A man by the name of Spike Moss came to the school district headquarters and indicated that he brought the necessary expertise and et cetera, and he would like to be a part of the discussion. And then there was an African-American woman who I thought made one of the most profound declarations, and that was these folks were in there talking about our children, our black babies, and et cetera. And so, you know, it would be important to have black folks talk about the, you know, the future of African Americans, African American children, et cetera. Well, it got so ugly that the council president indicated that they wanted a quiet meeting, and that Mr. Moss did not represent that or would not represent that. But to the credit of the sheriff of Hennepin County, Richard Stanick, indicated that he just didn't buy that, and he just didn't quite understand why a person such as Mr. Moss, who has had, you know, standing of over 40 years of activities, no matter what people may think about him politically or whatever, but the fact of the matter, he's been out there. So they actually, you know, like took a vote to determine if Mr. Moss could come in and be seated, you know, which I guess set the tone. Now, here's what's been said since the meeting last Friday by powerful, you know, Caucasian individuals and institutions, that they thought that by and large the African-American, you know, dialogue and exchange was fairly soft and fairly weak, you know what I mean? And they didn't feel that the passion that they would have expected to hear from a people that were being examined, if you will, like you were in an experimental laboratory, was present, okay? And so that is kind of the background, but those people who were in the meeting, V.J. Smith, Bishop Howe, a couple of those folks, have been recognized by the city as your leader. Okay?
Well,
Don Samuels was there, by the way. Oh, I'll tell you someone that was there. Boy, we hadn't heard from him for a long time. Jonathan Palmer, who works in St. Paul at Hallie Q. Brown, still has a job over there. Jonathan Palmer was one of those invited by his good friend Sherman Patterson. And I was just puzzled when I kind of heard the roster. Let me tell you how heavy this was, though. The Star Tribune was told that they would not be able to stay for the duration. They would be able to hear the preamble, and that then they would have to excuse themselves and exit the meeting. So this was going to be a real heavy, this is how we're going to deal with the Negroes during the summer of 2014. Too many black folks were allowed into the meeting. I mean, you know what I mean? And so some decisions were made to hold back on the discussion and have it probably at the more secure county government building.
Well, you know, I mean, I really appreciate you, you know, giving me that information and kind of the background story. But, I mean, it reeks of a charade. I mean, I just have to say, you know, they say no passion there, no. Well, they didn't want any there. If they wanted, they would have invited the people that could have made it a more positive. I mean, it takes, you know, this is not going to be a nicey thing. You know, I mean, it reeks of people of puppetry.
Good word.
And bring in, you know, puppets that are going to move by the strings, and that's fine. And those that, you know, don't want to dance to that music, well, they seem that they're shunned. They seem to be shunned for it. And this seemed like it could have been a real opportunity. But to me, it reeks of a charade where they put things in place and they say, well, but your party wasn't here. I mean, we brought all these high-powered people together, but there's no passion here. There's no, you know, we're trying. Boy, you're not. I mean, that's all the earmarkings of a charade. And, you know, I mean, there are people in social services. There are people in legal. There are people in education. There are people from this community in business, you know, that should be listened to and that should be brought to the table And the only way you do that is you reach out. You have outreach to actually bring those type of people in. So, you know.
Absolutely.
And that's, again, back to my original question. How does this barrier, you know, get broken through? How is this brought to the people so that the people at least begin to have some say and input, and so that the things that are decided are the things that the community and the people have voiced? And it, right now, I don't see that voice. I don't see how, you know, that voice can be funneled into these type of, you know, meetings. I mean, they orchestrate all of these things, and it's so orchestrated as to you find out about it after it's over.
There you go. Well, one of the issues that certainly is at hand now is that, and I've been saying it as an activist and a journalist ever since the election night, first Tuesday, November of last year, the door has really been closed to us. See, maybe if, example, we would have had a black city councilman, someone like the legendary Van White, you know, yeah, our first African-American city councilman, or Sharon Sales Belton, our second, if you will, who would have insisted that there be full inclusion. But as I've said, I've said it on this program and our dialogue with you, we totally have been closed out of City Hall. Once we lost our seats on the city council, with no presence of African-Americans on the city council for the first time now in 33 and a half years, I said to my colleague, and I've said on this program, we were through booking. Mm-hmm. And I think in some regards, gentlemen, that what happened last Friday at the school district's headquarters at 1250 West Broadway was a clear illustration that we will dictate for you and to you the agenda, the dialogue, and who will be present to participate in that dialogue. And to think about this in closing, we have African-American officers. Actually, we're top-heavy with African-American officers because over half of our African-American officers are of command positions, sergeants and above, and that's pretty interesting. But we're losing the numbers of African-Americans in our police department. But you think about it, with the exception of Ed Frizzell, not a single African-American officer with anything of any years of service was invited to participate. And see, they did workshops the second half of the program and the activities. They did actual workshops. They broke down into focus groups. You know how that works. You break down into focus groups. You have 10, 11 people per focus group. Basically, these focus groups were facilitated over by Minneapolis police, if you will. I mean, how golden the opportunity would have been to have had some of our top African-American commanders who were on the streets, if you will, I think in terms of Sergeant Charles Adams, if you will, his brother Tony Adams. I think of the head of the assault unit, Lieutenant Art Knight, if you will. I think of Eric Lukes. You know, I think of a whole group of African-American officers. All those officers I talked about have an average of 25 years of experience in the Minneapolis Police Department, on the streets, and et cetera, and not a single one of them was invited. Okay?
Yeah, and not to tap into that. I mean, it just shows how these efforts and these things are up there as a facade. They're just perfunctory, you know, to say that, well, here, it's being done. But if you don't bring the right people to the table, you're not going to get the right results. And it's not going to be an easy thing because the work that has to be done, I mean, I'm just going to say it, it's going to be painful to turn this thing around. There are some people that have been very comfortable in their promoting of their own agendas. And that's not what this is about. The agenda is for the community, and the community is continuing to suffer. And the bottom line of that is, you know, as we get into these summer months, as we get into, I mean, the disparities in our area are atrocious. It's embarrassing to look at the statistics of the disparities in all, I mean, all important areas. You know, you talk about education, you talk about social services. Minnesota, the numbers are just dismal. And
dismal,
until
absolutely.
You want to stop being an abject failure, someone has to call them out. that they're an abject failure in what they're doing. The dollars that they're spending are going nowhere.
You're
not coming
right
into the community, and until, of course, the I think I've said enough, gentlemen. I think
All right. Mr. Allen, you have anything for him?
I just think, you know, how different this conversation could be between all three of us. Say if people were making $300,000, $400,000 a year in North Minneapolis that were leaders of nonprofit, but we had an unemployment rate of 3%. And those 3% were the ones that were being trained at a Summit Academy OIC into a apprenticeship program where they'd actually have a job, which would eliminate the unemployment rate altogether. But just think how different this conversation would be. And Mr. Edwards and him, there's been enough money that has gone through North Minneapolis for something like that to happen, you know, at least from 2008 to 2014. But we still, like the MS said, you know, there's people are dismal failures, and they're doing the same thing they've done all the time, which, you know, is insanity. But with that, I'm done on that.
All right. Well, M, want to thank you. We want to open the lines in case there's any other callers out there.
Always a pleasure.
All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
All right. Mr. Allen, just throw the number out there in case there are some additional people, you know, the individuals like him and et cetera are not afraid to express their opinions. That's what talk radio is about. We don't want to intimidate anybody, if you will. But I'm just interested here over the last number of months, the kind of the silence, you know. But I know the kind of – let me tell you, they were gathered up at the restaurant, the cafe on Glenwood just 2 days ago. And, geez, you had people formerly affiliated with the City Inc., was in there. You had all kinds of discussions going on. People had their heads together and et cetera, putting together the master plan. But the community is never told what the master plan is. And I repeat this again for the purposes of discussion. You know, we need to think about two mothers in the last 14 days that sat at the bedside of their children. Two African-American men in totally separate situations about 7 to 8 days apart who were shot and paralyzed. And by the way, there's no one in custody. Oops. And I want to say this to my Somali brothers and sisters. 18 homicides involving the Somali community over the last couple of years, only one of them has been solved.
Wow.
Only
that's
one. It. Yeah. Yeah.
That's incredible.
Yeah. And they're not having an honest discussion even within the Somali community on why this is happening, okay? So, but you think about it, 18 homicides, only one of them has been solved in the last, let's say, 2 years.
Wow, yeah. that's not good
yeah.
at all.
There's just something wrong. By the way, we continue to ask the question, how is the debate for the seats on the Board of Education? I still don't see anything, Mr. Allen. Have we missed something on our websites and et cetera?
No, they were having something. Oh. They were having some sabbathony, but I don't know if they've had that yet, Mr. Edwards. But the thing is,
they did. They had over 200 people in attendance. The house was counted, and there were only about 10 African Americans there.
Wow.
Over 200 people. In fact, I'll tell you one of the things that happened, which raised some questions about
that.
The future of Superintendent Bernadette Johnson, Marty Sable and his daughter showed up.
Oh, interesting. And we do have a caller.
And normally when that crew comes out, that means they're getting ready to be a change. So
yes.
Here's a meeting of the candidates, if you will, and there was probably at least 200 people there at Sabathany, right in the heart of you know, community of color, if you will, and only about 10 people of color in there. You know,
that's a shame.
Two Somalis and a couple blacks.
Okay. Caller, go ahead. You're live on the air. Who are we speaking with?
Brother James.
Yeah, Brother James. How you doing?
Oh, I'm doing fairly, middly, partly cloudy, like the weather. You know how it is.
Okay.
Listen, gentlemen, all these meetings, we've been meeting. You know, it's just like the Urban League. They've been meeting for 38 years. They just had their annual report that came out. But we can't never get anywhere in these meetings. because the people are constantly trying to listen to the wrong people. The wrong people here, their version of leadership is to spy, lie, and become an overgrown house Negro and a stool pigeon in return for 501c3 money.
Okay, okay. Okay.
How you going to turn stars into stars when you dealing with people who don't even read the local newspapers?
Oh, they can't read it. Yeah.
They can't even read the local newspapers. You know, we had a lady here some years ago named Jane Addams. She was a reporter for the Star Tribune. She came out, Mr. Edwards, you remember this, she came out with Keith Ellis should be a leader, Mr. Palmer should be a leader, Brett Buckner should be a leader, and everybody that she named, either they either corrupt, they either stole, they either got caught into some type of scandal, and for Mr. Palmer to pop back up, didn't he leave for sexual assault from up at the Civil Rights Department? Sexual harassment?
Well, he had some problems at an organization he was with, and then he had some problems over at Hallie Q. Brown. They had to settle there. But to your question, yeah, he had some real problems with sexual misconduct. Uh-huh. Yeah.
And all the
he left City Hall. He left City Hall after some problems with the count on the money at the empowerment zone. Don't you remember that? He was at one point in charge of the empowerment zone.
Yeah, and the people that got that $38 million is talking that empowerment zone. We don't hear from them. We can have some beautiful things going on over in North Minneapolis with $38 million. We can have what they call overnight school, where they can sleep there, wake up there, get educated there, and from then on maybe go to one of the top universities in the country and come back.
Kind of like a private boarding school. Kind of like a private boarding school. You know, you're absolutely right.
Thank you.
Absolutely right.
And we got a building sitting directly across from one of the major grocery stores that's just sitting empty, idle, cobwebs and everything. That big, nice building they got up there, the blue and the glass where they got all the where they used to run the spy network out of.
Used to be an old car dealership. Yeah.
But every time we talk about leadership in Minneapolis, all you get, the leaders here, all they want to do is have young stool pigeons on the ground that report to them, and they go back and report to their handlers, and they get a check, and then they can go buy some Men's Warehouse suits. They can go buy them a BMW. They can go down there and get J.J. Hortz. They can go down at Sevens and then sneak away from their wife and go get with a Caucasian woman. Oops. Is that too real?
Okay.
That's real.
Wow. Yeah.
And
well,
our latest international target now, because, you know, Obama's putting a lot of money here and there, but our latest enemy now is Joseph Kony out of Africa.
Mm-hmm.
He's our new target.
Mm-hmm.
And I read here in a recent black publication that over in Israel, they got people over there, they want the Palestinians to spy in order to live. That means that if you spy for us, we can give you medical, we can give you the best doctors, we can let you go to the best hospital. But if you do say you're going to do that and you don't do that, then guess what? You just might die if you got a medical issue and you need to come across over here out of the strip over here in Israel and get that help. You ain't going to get that.
Let me just say something that you talked about. I first broke that story almost 2 years ago when the Obama administration announced the appointment, the creation and then the appointment of General Carter Ham, a Caucasian general, three-star general. It's called the African Command, and you know, I've been saying to people that you really need to take a look at America's Special Operations Forces that are in Central Africa, both the Central African Republic, in Burundi, in Rwanda, in the Congo, and etc., who are killing a lot of black people, okay, which is something, you know, this country does well, killing people of color, be they red or black, and you can't get the kind of discussion that you need. I know the Black Congressional Caucus, James, has tried to raise the question to the Obama administration. I mean, what is the real goal of the African Command, if you will? In fact, if you watch real closely sometime when you watch the NewsHour and they began to cut back on indicating so-called casualties in either Iraq or Afghanistan. But some of the casualties that they've been showing are casualties of American combat troops coming out of Central Africa. And when I say Central Africa, I'm not only talking about the Central African Republic, but the countries that I previously named. And I think it's really sad that we as a black community, and by the way, we have not spent enough time, and we've got you here, Mr. Allen, we have not said anything about the continued role of the Supreme Court cutting the ground out from under civil rights. James, what was your take on the decision of the court yesterday to basically end affirmative action in the state of Michigan?
Well, I think that Michigan, the blacks in Michigan is going to have to stand up, just like the blacks here are going to have to stand up. Sotomayor, may God bless her, because she is the only beacon for change. I don't know if Clarence Thomas is drinking methadone Kool-Aid. Clarence Thomas.
Methadone Kool-Aid. Yeah.
I don't know what's on his mind. But the American foreign policy toward third world countries have always been this, and you can go back and read the history books. You put who we want in office or else we'll starve your kids.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Doesn't that picture look that way when you see things on PBS and some of these other international news outlets? It's always the kids are suffering.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The babies are already dying. The babies all dying. They're all on the run. The mother's on the run. She got two on her back, three in her hand, and she's running, trying to run to safety.
Yeah, with a bundle of her last godly goods being balanced on her head. There's a prediction that has been made by some foreign think tanks. I'm talking about in countries of color, particularly coming now out of South America. Prediction is that there will be a decrease of at least 12 million black Africans by the end of, quote-unquote, this decade. And you touched on a very sensitive item, and that is the number of black children in black Africa that are dying of everything, infectious disease, malnutrition, death caught in the middle of this conflict. You look at what happened in Nigeria. 200 young Nigerian girls at a boarding school thought they were safe. These so-called rebels come in, sweep them up, take them deep into the quote-unquote jungle/forest, and it'll be interesting to see if they will be saved. Now, you know, the United States has a presence of American military hardware in that part of the world. They could have sent aircraft, if you will, with very sophisticated equipment to have helped out, but they've got the Nigerian administration convinced that the best way to deal with this is to bomb, drop napalm, bomb the sites and the more that you kill. If you're going after 12 rebels and you wind up killing 400 black Nigerians, then so what? And, again, this is not being talked about because Fox and CNN and CBS and all the rest of them don't talk about it. Our people are so conditioned now that their response is, well, you know, if Massa ain't talking about it, then we shouldn't discuss it.
Yeah. What's the matter, Massa? We said
our leaders in Washington and our leaders locally are out for one thing, and that's their paycheck. They know that if they get out of line, they keep you in check. They give you a check to keep you in check, and when you get out of check, the check stops.
Yeah. Let me
That's
go back
when
to
you go in any courtroom. You go in any courtroom. That blind woman is up there with that scale of justice, and her hand is tilting toward the dough, and the other hand is tilting up toward the judge. And remember, it says right over here, "In God We Trust." Meaning, if you put some money on this right hand, the scale will tip evenly, and the dough will open, and out the dough you go.
Right. All right, Brother James, we appreciate it, man. Appreciate you responding
to the question
about...
Let me bring it to your attention because, you know, we're skipping on this here. You know, I'm a millionaire welfare queen, the husband and wife team. Come to find
out... The white
out
folks
now,
down in Florida? Money. Yeah.
Yeah, come to find out today they stole money from big churches out of Minnesota. Nobody's talking about that.
Yeah, well, that's the reason, really, that they finally were apprehended.
Our old governor, Timmy Pawlenty, he used to talk about blacks coming to Minnesota for welfare only.
Yeah.
But I don't know no blacks that ever got millions of dollars in welfare and lived out of another state and was getting it here, and especially when you got to report every month, every 2 days, every two, 3 days. I mean, come on. Everybody that's black know how the welfare system goes.
And, you know, when they were arrested in Florida, they were on their 80-foot luxury yacht. All right, Brother James, thank you.
And if you look
Take
at them
care.
Real close, I'm going to say this and I'm done. If you look at them real close, they claim to be of royalty, but they ain't nothing but toxic waste. They ain't even white trash. They toxic waste. There's a special place where they dump them at.
Absolutely.
All I can say is have some money when you get ready to go to the federal penitentiary because Bubba's in there waiting on them.
Yeah. Absolutely. They won't get no time.
Keep up the good work,
take care of them.
Y'all
All right,
keep
take
up the
care.
Good work and keep up the good fight.
Thank you, sir.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
All right,
peace out.
Yeah, Mr. Allen, we kind of and should have dealt with that, but I was waiting to see some kind of response here from our legal, academics and academicians. But, you know, that decision by the Supreme Court, and as he said, Sotomayor is clearly a hero. This woman has stood tall. She said some things that caused Justice Roberts to have to try to respond to protect, quote-unquote, the reputation and so-called integrity of the court, because she really called her fellow justices on that decision that it was clearly predicated on continued promotion of racism in America. You know, that was quite a decision to basically say that there can be no specific rules or regulations which protects the rights of African Americans to come into public education institutions in the state of Michigan. And I think here in Minnesota and Wisconsin are two states that, boy, if the Billy Bob is in place and ready, if they can get away with it, I think we may see that kind of action here.
Yep, I agree. I agree 100%. It's going to be crazy. Just nuts here going down. And I was looking to see if there's any news updates on the Star Tribune, because remember last week they had some stuff posted like 9:40, 9:42, and there are really no new headlines worth even going into. Except one that I find real funny, that the momentum shift at play in Minnesota GOP on gay marriage. And to the Minnesota GOP, that's too little too late at this point. So.
And what does that shift consist of, Mr. Allen? I mean, they're how to where to prepare.
From what the story is saying, very vague. Again, this is the Star Tribune, and they're saying that they're growing momentum in the Republican Party to end its longstanding opposition to same-sex marriage, with activists inside the party, and they have it's really interesting. They got a picture of a black father, another black father, and their son.
All with the young kid in Georgia.
Yeah.
The young 9-year-old sitting between them. Yeah, that was in this morning's edition of the Star Tribune. Right. I found that to be very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That they went all the way to Georgia to get that kind of picture. I mean, they could have got a picture out of Minnesota.
Yeah, easy. They're talking about Minnesota, you know, and they're acting like, you know. Yeah, and that was really weird for the Star Tribune to even run a picture like that with the for the Minnesota, talking about the Minnesota, the GOP in general. So, so I'm not even going to even give that any.
Yeah. Again, we want our listeners here and domestically and internationally. The story was about, you know, same-sex marriage here in the state of Minnesota and same-sex adoptions and they show this picture of two black men, middle age, and a very handsome 9-year-old black male child sitting between them looking like he was as happy as he could be in the world, that he certainly was being well treated by his parents. And yet that's the picture that they ran. And I said, well, they could have found two white individuals, Caucasians, with a young white child, in this case preferably a male, and ran that same kind of picture. I couldn't understand the probative value, Mr. Allen, of a picture from Georgia, because I then looked at the picture. So then I looked to see if there was any material in the article with these two parents, male parents, discussing, you know, what their thinking was and, you know, what positives and negatives that have come out of their relationship and obviously adoption. There was no reference to them at all in the story. Maybe they got it from the Atlanta Constitution and just put the picture in there. I don't know.
Well, it was crazy wherever they got it from. Just, there's nothing to have that picture in there. So.
Yeah,
I find it real funny.
Anything else? You say nothing on the Star Tribune in the last four minutes that we...
Nothing on Star Tribune, new. I'm not seeing anything that's been updated. Let me just go back to Biden Check Politics. So let me check the state, because it's probably in the paper today, the stuff that's on here. New. Nothing interesting at all.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, and I, because we had an interesting discussion at the beginning of the program about the man who allegedly founded America. Aren't there a couple of other resolutions they've got on the table for some changes and et cetera? Well, that's right. They put in Somali Day. We talked about that about 3 weeks ago. July 1 will be Somali Day or
Somali Day, yes, sir.
Appreciation
yes.
of the Somalis.
Yes, yes. July 1st, if I'm mistaken. Yes, that will be Somali Day. And now they're going to have Indigenous People Day. But we don't even know what they're talking about when they say Indigenous people. It should be, you know, Native Americans or people that were here originally. But if you talk about Indigenous people, it has to be defined, because you could go to, how can I put this without, you know, dismissing anybody. I'm just saying that the big picture there, and they're missing the big picture, period. They need to concentrate on things that will help the infrastructure and people get jobs. Changing the name of a day is not going to do squat for anybody. Because at the end of the day, your bank account is not moved, you know, up a dollar.
Right. By the way, in closing, have we seen any numbers from the Viking Stadium in that we're now dealing with hours as opposed to the presence of individuals? I mean, how many hours have been worked on the stadium as of this date, and how many of those hours are African-Americans and people of color? I mean, look, maybe we can send a text to Alex Tittle, Don, and ask Alex to join us next week, or at least we can ask the public information officer, Ms. Hathaway.
Ms. Hathaway, yes, Jennifer Hathaway.
Yes. Let's ask them to at least one of them to come on the program and give us the numbers, because the numbers certainly should be in place.
Especially
the hours. I'm fascinated to know the hours that have been accumulated by African Americans and others of color. And we're moving into the second quarter, so the first quarter number. Well, they gave numbers to the special legislative Oversight Committee under the chairmanship of State Senator Bobby Joe Champion. Let's try and do that, Mr. Allen. We're making a commitment tonight here on the program that we're going to try to get Alex Tittle, our director of equity there, or certainly the public information officer, because public information officers, that's their job to answer the questions being asked by the public.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Correct.
I'd like to see those numbers. I mean, they got to be pretty big. Got to remember, the numbers should represent, within the numbers, should be 32% of people of color and women should be within those numbers. And right now, I would estimate that the African-American community has probably acquired about $14-15 million in income.
Just ours.
So things should be pretty good in our communities right now.
Think about it,
listeners. Based on the fact that it's ours now that are part of the equation, we should be talking $9-11 million in salaries have already been paid on the Viking Stadium.
At least, Mr. Edwards.
Yeah, I'm just talking for people of color,
okay?
Uh-huh. Well, we should be in damn good shape.
Yes, we should be.
Yeah. All right, well, we can begin to wrap it, I guess.
Okay, thanks for listening. We'll be back here next week. You're listening to the Ron and Don Show and James with Hope.